Blog Talk Radio.
Items, here we go with the main event of the evening. Ladies and gentlemen in attendance, Bucks and fans joining us around the world. It's time for the bout you've all been waiting for.
Man, we dedicate our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moving, and we want that fight and to land on the line.
Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Wednesday afternoon, kind of funky. I tried to do one last night. I had some technical issues, but you know how that goes. Life just gets in the way. But anyway, hope everybody's having a good week thus far. We do have a variety of items to discuss here on the show. I believe we're going to have senior writer Jake Donovan on. A boxing scene and a variety of other things, Jake and Lefty and whatnot. He was supposed to come on yesterday, but I had technical difficulties. So hopefully we can fit him in here for at least a little bit. But we will start by recapping the ESPN card. And, you know, I mean, that Abraham Nova and Adam Lopez was a really interesting, good, competitive scrap. But... you know, sometimes we talked about how this basically, like, the top three fights were all 50-50s on paper, and sometimes you can match them up, and it just doesn't work out, right? Styles make fights, and, you know, Shaw came in and looked pretty good, but just didn't throw enough punches throughout that fight, at least in the second fight with Guido and Johnny. You know, at least you could really tell when someone got hit pretty hard, you know what I mean? So there was at least some back and forth in that one. We almost got a really bad decision there as far as, you know, whether it wasn't going to be a TKO or if we're going to go to the cards. Luckily, they got that right. That was huge by the commission, by the way. And you wish that was a possibility. I mean, it is a possibility just to have replay everywhere, but... you know, when you're on the native land and it's their casino and it's their commission, you know, the commissioner said, hey, I saw this. You saw that. I disagree with you. You know, I wish we could do that more, especially when we have, you know, instant replay. But they got it right. That was the key. But like I said, sometimes you can match them up and, you know, you go to the betting sites. They look even on paper. They looked even. Somewhat in the ring anyway, not really, but, I mean, yeah, actually they did. The main event was a competitive fight, but man, like I said, the matchmakers can do their jobs, but sometimes it just doesn't work out. It was a very, sometimes you just have mediocre fights that you thought were going to be exciting, or at least not necessarily a brawl. I didn't think, the main event or even the co-feature, but especially the main event, I didn't think that'd be a brawl, but I did expect more action out of both. I mean, even Johnny Rice winning, he didn't throw that many punches considering it kind of looked like he was holding back because he wasn't in tip-top shape, but we'll get into that. We'll definitely get into that. We do have a Showbox card coming this Friday. And then on DAZN here in the States and Sky Sports over the UK, Chris Eubank Jr. and Liam Smith, along with some interesting fights on the undercard. Joseph Parker against Jack Massey. I don't really know how interested that is, but Parker does need a nice win to keep going or whatever. But yeah, we got some interesting fights, so we'll definitely check that out. And then we do have some fight news. You know, Oscar set a deadline saying he didn't get the contract. He tweeted that, I believe, and people took it every which way. Oh, you know, PBC, Al Heyman, Gervonta, they don't want the fight. They haven't sent the contract. Some people took it like, well, Ryan Garcia has the contract, and he's not giving it to them. That means he doesn't want it. You know, it went all over the place. So he set this deadline, per se, and of course the deadline went by. But then the next day, yesterday, Tuesday, you know, all of a sudden, it was fine, and they have a signed contract. So, and they used April 15th as the date as well in the post. Kind of weird. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And then Inoue, it is now official. Inoue is moving up to 122. He said he wants three fights in 2023. I wonder when the last time he had three fights in a year. I should check that out. But that's great news. You know, that's phenomenal news. What's his first fight? You know, it sounds like he may fight, what, in April and then fight in the summer and then close out the year. So whether it's in April or whether it's, you know, in the summer, Inoue and Fulton, Inoue and MJ. I know MJ has a fight, and I believe he has, if I remember correctly, he has a mandatory behind that one too. So not totally sure about that, but I'm pretty sure that's how it goes. But for sure he's got a fight anyway. So we'll see, you know, where that goes. But yeah, there is there's other fight news, just current fight news out there, whether fights are being made or now we presumably have a date for Haney and Loma. Some people are saying Madison Square Garden, NYC. Some people are saying, you know, over in the Middle East, whether it's Saudi or whatever. We don't know if it's going to be ESPN, ESPN pay-per-view. Maybe it's ESPN Plus. You'd assume if it was going to be overseas, they wouldn't do it on pay-per-view, but you never know. That would be pretty strange, though, for Haney to sign this three-fight deal, and I don't know if he had to sign an extension or not. I guess we'll find out later with that stuff, but for him to fight, if this holds up, hopefully it's in the States, in New York, in Madison Square Garden, but it would be pretty crazy for him to have those three fights all outside of the country. I mean, hey, he's still making good money and all that stuff. It's just strange, that's all. Jake Paul and Tommy Fury, sounds like they got a fight. That it's a done deal. I don't know. I think that actually is going to be in Saudi. There are some other, you know, fight news stuff that'll be more interesting, I should say, than that too, Joe. We're not just going to talk about that fight. But anyway, if this is your first time listening to the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Rope-A-Dope Radio. However, you don't have to go to Blog Talk and Rope-A-Dope and download the show directly there. Listen to the browser. You can find the platform Rope-A-Dope Radio under Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, Spreaker, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, a whole host of other places as well. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com, Phil Boxing and Eastside Boxing as well. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord or you're happy and you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called DirecTV Stream. The prices start as low as $69.99. They still have that three-month deal. That saves you $160. If you go the choice package and above for HBO Max, Showtime, Stars, Epix, and Cinemax, and if you do the same thing with the packages or above and buy the exclusive DirecTV streaming device, that saves you some money as well. DirecTV Stream. Okay, so, you know, I mean, it was weird, man. It was weird. I mean, this fight was won on a jab, you know what I mean, basically. 90 to 48, that was the land totals, Ajogba and Shaw. It's not like I didn't give Shaw any rounds or anything. Like, all three judges had it 96-94. It just was such a slow fight, you know? I mean, the first two rounds, not a whole lot happening. I mean, you can say that throughout the fight. Jabs mostly by Ajogba. one or two nice left hooks by Shaw, but he just didn't move his hands enough. I did think he he did enough with those left hooks and even his jab in the third round to win it. Actually, it wasn't left hooks. In the third round, I think it was jab in a right hand, a couple of right hands. Then I gave Ajagbe, the fourth round. And through four rounds, I think the jab, he already had a 29-20 advantage that, like I said, he stretched to 90-48. And, that was about it. I mean, the fifth round was really close, very slow, both of them kind of missing. You could see Shaw maybe having the better defense of the two, but he wasn't really landing much. So do you give the fifth to Shaw? Maybe, I don't know. Actually, I'm reading the wrong part of my scorecard. That's funny. Actually, I gave the fourth. Did I say I gave the fourth to Shaw? I meant the fourth to Ajagba. In the fifth was close, but the sixth round I definitely gave. You started to see more right hands during the exchange, especially that I thought that Ajagba got the better of them. But you could, I don't know, it seemed like Shaw was throwing a little bit more in that seventh round. That's the one I thought was the fifth round, I think. I don't remember. It's so slow. But yeah, the eighth round, the seventh round, maybe you give to Shaw. The eighth round, 16-8 lands. That's like the most exciting round, probably. I don't know. The fight sucked, dude. Shaw probably won the ninth as well. Moments of success, mid and late, probably did it. But it did. The fight sucked. I mean, and here's the thing. Shaw had this opportunity. Both of them had an opportunity, but a main event. And it's like he's going to kick himself when he watches this tape. And I'm not saying, if he just threw his hands more, he'd win the fight. I'm not saying that because maybe it would open him up more, But, dude, that fight sucked, man. That fight sucked. There's just no way around it. 96-94, all three for Ajagba. I'm fine with that. I did, like I said, give Shaw a round. Some people are like, I can't even give him a round. I mean, it's not like Ajagba was doing a ton either, but yeah, just more on Shaw though. It kind of makes him look funny, makes him look silly, kind of makes him look dumb when you see the cameras on him and he's in the spotlight. And I mean like before the fights, and we always see people either being really serious or warming up in the locker room, or just having some fun. And he was dancing, having some fun. On his way out, he gave a kiss to his wife, but he was making sure to dap almost everybody he walked in. It just felt like he was taking it all in, but it was like, man, some of the things that he said leading up to it, and then for that to be the performance. And listen, I'm not worried about people dancing or having fun or anything like that. I mean, I've said this before, beyond the Minnesota Gophers football program, my second favorite is the Miami Hurricanes. Okay, so I'm not this whole, I don't like hot dogging and get off my lawn. It has nothing to do with that. It's just if you're going to have some fun and you're going to talk some shit, I'm not saying he was talking a bunch of shit, but it just seemed like he was really feeling himself in the ESPN spotlight, and then he barely threw punches. And he still won rounds, and he barely threw enough punches. And, I still think he could probably win this fight, but I don't want to do that to Ajagba either, because he did win the fight, and like I said, he won the fight with his jab, and that's how he won it. So there's not a whole lot to take from this. Ajagba moves on. It'll be interesting to see, where they move him from here, because they do have, some heavyweights, Jared Anderson at some point here in the coming future, maybe not next, but I would like to see that. I don't know, man. It was just kind of weak, dude. I mean, that's being nice about it. It was weak, dude. It was weak. But the Vianello and Rice fight, the Guido and Johnny, the first round, maybe one decent shot by Guido that landed. I gave Guido the second round as well. The third and fourth round, his jab, a few left hooks, a right hand. Rice just wasn't throwing, you know, and I understand that he took this on, what, 3 weeks or something like that. He didn't weigh as much as he did in the second fight with Cafe, but he didn't look like he was in great shape. Through four rounds, it was 45-21, right, Guido, 82 punches thrown. So you do the math. You're throwing like around 20 punches a round. It's just not enough, you know. But I will say this, by the time, you know, the fifth and the sixth, and, you know, as this fight went on, he did start to land his jab and right hand more. And there was a late right hand, I believe, in the fifth round during the exchange that I was like, oh, okay, Rice, here we go. Maybe he's just thinking, dude, this thing's a 10-rounder. I'm going to make it through. You know what I mean? I'm gonna just second half it and go for it. And so you did kind of see him go for it, you know, more. A big right hand midway through the sixth round, and that's where I believe that left eye cut, like the eyelid. It was kind of a nasty cut. They did start to tie up more in that part, in that sixth, right around the fifth, sixth round. And then the seventh round, the ref said, you know, he stopped the fight, score the round. But they said it was a clash of heads. Was it Benji? Yeah, I think it's Benji. And it's like, wait a second, what? What do you mean, dude? You can see the punch land, and then you can see the blood trickle to the guy's shoulder or whatever. So it was like, what do you mean? So there was some kind of like, we're going to the scorecards, which, you know, I actually ended up not seeing the scorecards now that I think about it, but I believe Guido was ahead. But then the commissioner said, hey, listen, I saw something else. I saw a punch, and then I saw blood. So if you want to check out this replay, you can, but I think you're wrong, basically. So they checked out the replay, and like I said, they don't have replay. They kept saying that. But it's not like, you know, in other parts of this country, the native land, it's their law. So they can say, nah, dude, we're going to get this right. And they did. And that was so Johnny Rice got the victory. Credit to him. I didn't think much of Guido coming in. I did think Rice could win, but I wanted to see what kind of shape he was in. And that's basically what it'll come down to with Johnny Rice, because, you know, when he's in good shape, I mean, he can throw combination punches. He's a big dude. You know, he's a good fighter. He's a very good fighter. I'm not saying he's top five, you know, but, or maybe he wouldn't even be top five ever, but in the heavyweight, but he's a game fighter. And even when he came in out of shape, like 282 or whatever, 283 it was for the rematch, because maybe he just thought, oh, this can be easy or whatever. And I know that, you know, I know that he had a full-time job. Then he said he got $100,000 in the rematch or something, and then the opportunities kind of went away or whatever. So he got his opportunity, took advantage of it. It didn't seem like he was early, but like I said, on late notice, maybe it was smart to kind of start that way. You know what I mean? Just kind of start that way and go from there. So he got the win, you know, like I said, heavyweight, this division, they got guys to face off. I mean, Ojogwe and Rice would be a good fight, I think. But yeah, Rice, it'll come down to if he, you know, conditioning, because if he can throw punches, he's a fighter. He can really put his punches together, you know, to an extent anyway. I think he's good, but I can't sit there and give him a ton of credit for this win, but he landed a big enough shot to cut the guy. It did seem like he was coming on in the second half. Now, would he have had the steam to be able to go all the way to the 10th round and keep winning like that? I don't know. Maybe. He didn't seem tired, you know? That was the thing about Shaw, too. He wasn't even breathing heavy. And you're like, dude, come on, man. Like, go. Like, you know, throw some punches. You know, I'm not saying throw punches and just to get caught with punches and be stupid about it or go for a home run every time. It's just, I don't know, man. So the top two fights, although on paper were, you know, even, they sucked. I mean, yeah, the main event was competitive on the scorecards. I do have to say that, but yeah, it is what it is. But the fight that was really interesting was Abraham Nova and Adam Lopez. I really liked that fight. The first round, close round, could have went either way. Nova, later in the round, landed a couple of solid punches early. Lopez landed something. I'm not really sure who won that round. I'd have to go watch it again. The second round, I thought some nice body work by Nova early. But then Lopez was landing kind of that in-and-out stuff. He'd land like a nice punch, whether it's like an uppercut or just kind of landing in and out. I thought he won the round. Then Nova kind of went on a nice little run. The third round, good back and forth, though. That could have went either way. Lopez, in the first part of the round especially, he landed the better shots, and maybe overall he landed it. But the jab right hand, I don't know, maybe late in that round, Nova maybe stole that round. I don't know. It could have went either way. One and three are pretty open. But like I said, I thought Nova went on a nice little run after that. He definitely won the fourth, fifth, and sixth. And, you know, there was time, like in the fourth round, Lopez did flurry, but it was a little too late. The head and body shots, just the, you know, just good combinations coming out of Nova. And during exchange midway, the fifth round, there was, I think it was a left hand, and then midway they had exchanges, like I said. Then I think it was like a left hand, right hook, left hook, and that dropped him, scored a knockdown. And then Lopez smartly moved a lot after that. Now the sixth round, there was another 10-8 round, and Nova did come out kind of on fire right away. Lopez, the last minute or so, was landing his jab to the head and the body, doing some pretty good stuff. But the hooks, uppercuts by Nova, there was a knockdown. It seemed like he got him with some good shots, but then the other shots that he didn't, I don't know, that he didn't really land that well. It kind of looked like more of like a push down than anything for that second knockdown. Like I said, he threw punches, two or three of them at the end there before the knockdown, but it just didn't seem to land all that much. It seemed like there was just a balance thing, and Lopez kind of put his head down, but then Nova, like, pushed him. So I thought that was kind of weak. I did think that Lopez bounced back, though, in the seventh and eighth. I gave him both those rounds. The start of the seventh was pretty slow, but he was kind of on a stick-and-move type thing, got to the body more, nice hooks in, nice right hands as well in the eighth round. Really good action. The last, like, 35, 40 seconds of the eighth round was a whole lot of fun. This was even the ninth round I gave to Nova, but it was a competitive round. I think in the last minute, an uppercut and a hook, big right hand as well. I think Nova finished that round a little stronger, but then I gave Lopez the last one. Both of them kind of had a slow start. A minute left, several big shots for Nova, but I thought maybe mid to late, the combos to the head and body. Lopez really started letting his hands go. I didn't actually see the punch stats, but they did give it to Nova, 98-90, 97-91, and 98-90. And I wasn't too thrilled about all those cards. Now, 97-93, that makes sense, because obviously you have the two knockdowns, even though one of them was probably bullshit. But I'm looking at my scorecard, and I gave him at least four. I gave him four rounds. So the knockdowns are what won. I thought 6-4 would be, you know, I could see 5-5, honestly, 6-4, 5-4, 1. But I can't see six rounds for Lopez. I probably could only see that for Nova, you know. But I didn't think it was 8-2. Like the other scorecards had it. But Nova, I was okay with Nova winning, but I just didn't think that they were that wide, personally. I thought Lopez kind of got a little screwed on the actual cards, how they were scored. Like I said, that 96-94 kind of rang true for me. So, anyway, we do have one more fight. And actually, you know what? You know how life gets in the way. I just got a message, so Jake's actually not going to come on here. I actually I actually have to make this I'm not going to be able to fit him in, basically, unfortunately. So sometimes, you know, the old life gets in the way, right? I'm sure you guys are sick of hearing that, though, because you're like, yeah, dude, we know. But then we have that was the best fight on that card, obviously, and one of the best fights of the weekend. But the Jessica Neri Plata and Kim Clavel, that was a fun fight. Now, I thought Neri Plata, I thought she won pretty cleanly. But it was a really good fight. And you know, we could talk about, you know, women's boxing is much easier to get the unifications and the undisputeds and all that. It's easier to put the fights together. And we know there is way less depth in women's boxing and whatnot. So sometimes, like I said, the fights are just easier to be made. And, you know, it does have it's growing. It's had a hell of a run lately. But something I've said more than in recent years, the last few, specifically the last two and a half, whatever, we're now getting some pretty high-level fights. Like, not just, well, it's undisputed. Well, sometimes you could be a big fight with belts on the line and someone just one-side somebody. You know, I'm not saying all that. I'm saying, like, the skill level of some of these fights now, that doubleheader, both those fights back in September, well, actually October got moved to, of course, Serrano and Taylor. Like, this Neri Plata and Clavel fight, you know, Clavel's the come-forward fighter. You know, in the beginning of the fight, wasn't having a ton of success, but was still coming. But she made these little adjustments, whether it was defensively, whether it was taking a step back, whether it was a little upper body movement, whether it was using her jab more. You're just seeing more and more of these higher level, more skilled fights between women. Sometimes, you know, years ago, it would be just these two females are just going at it, right? And that's what, hey, man, this is awesome. They're going for it, you know? And most fight fans like that stuff, but I just wanted to say we're really starting to see more and more higher level skill when it comes to this. And I thought that was, you know, I thought that exactly what happened. I thought Neri Plata won probably three out of the first four cleanly. The first round was, you know, it was a really pretty slow at the start, but it picked up a little bit in the second part. Both fighters were going to the body pretty well throughout the fight. I just think the 1-2s, you know, that right hand behind that jab, and the little step back, there was plenty of give and take in the second and third round too, but I just thought Jessica Neri Plata was just outskilling her at the time. And, you know, like I said, Clavel, she'd have these moments, you know, where she would do well, you know, she would have little rapid-fire combos and stuff like that and shoe-shine stuff. But overall, you know, the rapid-fire hooks and straight right hands along with that jab, I thought, you know, Neri Plata was doing that pretty well. So I gave her, like I said, three out of the four. The fourth round had some great action in it, though. Clavel going to the body really well. I thought she did really well to the body. And she was kind of missing somewhat anyway, and I'm talking about Clavel, to the head. And then she did make that adjustment where she had more success later to the head. And I gave her the fifth round, Clavel. It seemed like she was a little bit more strategic. She was, like I said, landing those better, cleaner head shots and finally moving a little bit more. So, I thought she won that round. Maybe you could give her another round or two tops. Maybe the first round, I don't know. But to me, Nova, the combination punching at she just had distance control basically the whole time, timing her with the jab, scoring points. And, you know, throughout these rounds, though, there was these, you know, 30-second minute moments where there's just two-way action. So it was really fun to watch that way. The ninth, that was another competitive round. That could have been another round you give to Clavel. I thought middle and late, she may have stole that round, but it was a really competitive round. So, yeah, mostly to the body, I think, in that ninth round, if I remember correctly. And then, to me, Nery Plaza stole the 10th round late. So 97-93, two scorecards, 96-94. I thought those scorecards were just fine. And, yeah, like I said, this was an interesting fight, very interesting. And, we're just starting to see more and more of this. It's kind of awesome, you know, because like I said, it's much easier to put, you know, less difficult, maybe I should say, to put, you know, belts together to fight and undisputed and unifications and all that. Because like I said, sometimes there's only 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 pros, you know, in a certain division. So like I said, the depth still has plenty, you know, of room to grow, but you know, as time goes by, man, the skill level, and it's not just one-sided skill level. You start to see a fight with both of them are really skilled. And that's a great sign. That is a great sign for boxing in general, but especially women's boxing. So that was a good fight. I'd say the Nova-Lopez was probably the best fight, but then again, maybe not. Maybe that was. I mean, the scorecards I thought were tighter on that one. But, yeah, that female fight may have been the best fight of the weekend. Let's call it that. How about that? Let's call it that. And then, you know, you did have Ryan Norman Jr. and Bruce Carrington and Brady Jr. and stuff like that. They won as well. But I did, like I said, I did really like that we were able to, get the right, like how it should have been. You know what I mean? Like, get the right win that, because if it would have sucked if that would have, that co-feature in the ESPN with the cut, if that wouldn't have been called right, that would have been some bullshit. So I'm really glad that sometimes they don't always get that right. And then we did have that DAZN thing, the KSI and Salt Poppy, he knocked somebody out with the left hand, KSI went through him really quick, whatever. It is what it is. I saw some highlights on Twitter, and then I watched maybe a 5 minute, 6 minute highlight reel where I was, gotta be honest, I was fast forwarding some of it, on just the DAZN channel, on the YouTube channel. So that happened too. I did see some highlights. Like I said, the Salt Poppy, he had a nice left hand. I'll give him that. That's for sure. Now, you know, we do have that show box coming up this weekend. That's on Friday. You know, it's always worth it to at least just kind of give show box a try. Like, oh, let's see if it's any good. You know what I mean? Let's take a gander type thing. There are some interesting fights, but I'd say the biggest fight, obviously, the biggest fights, Chris Eubank Jr. and Liam Smith. We do have some Joseph Parker is fighting Jack Massey. Shouldn't have too much of a problem. Richard Ryakpor, I think that's how you say his name. He's fighting Krzysztof Głowacki. That's going to be interesting because this Ryakpor, he's 15-0. He's had a weird career because he started in 2016. Beat, especially in the UK, guys that you know, Tommy McCarthy, Chris Billion Smith, 2019, talking about a Jack Massey, he beat him in 2019 too. And then, you know, from the end of 2019 all the way till October 2021, there was a large, large gap here. So now he's kind of, you know, he beat some unbeaten guy that I hadn't seen him fight, actually, now that I'm looking at his name. Dion Juma. I remember seeing highlights, but I don't think I actually saw that full fight. But now he's going against Głowacki. Anyway, to already have, like, Chris Billion Smith, he's a cruiserweight, by the way. I don't know. This guy, from what I've seen a couple fights of his, but they were a while ago. I haven't seen his, quote-unquote, new fights, right? You know, I thought he had a pretty good jab. Nice right hand. He definitely likes to throw it. Sometimes he can, you know, get lost in that. It's weird because he has, like, there's moments like when he's in the middle of the ring or even when he's coming at somebody, like, patiently somewhat, not aggressive, come forward, but, like, you know, inching forward him, trying to find his distance. I notice he has pretty good defense there, but I remember, like, when you get him on the ropes, sometimes he's got some leaky defense. So we'll see if Globoski can bring that out of him. But, yeah, 15-0 prospect. Like I said, at cruiserweight, I wouldn't call him a prospect, to be honest with you, now that I think about it. He did have the – I think it was a split decision, correct? I think it was a split decision against Chris Billion Smith. I think it was. It says Billion Smith counted in the seventh round. Does that mean he got knocked down? I thought that was earlier in the fight, but it was a while ago, 2019. But, so yeah, I'm pretty sure the transnational rankings in the ring, I think they have him like 8th and 10th or something like that, or 8th and 9th. They have him in the, they have him in the rankings. So, yeah, I'd say he's pretty much – well, he's definitely a contender because he already, like I said, beat Chris Billion Smith. But it'll be interesting to see him and what he does, you know, this for this fight. I think that's kind of interesting. There's also a I'd say the closest match – well, that'd probably have to be the Congo, right? The Chris Congo and is it Ikau Esumun? That's a really close fight. In fact, Congo, it's pretty much 50-50. You see him like plus 100. You also see him as a minus 130. I see the highest is like plus 108. So that's a 50-50 right there. That's a competitive fight. Now, as far as the main event goes, Eubank Jr. and Liam Smith, he's a clean favorite. You can get Liam Smith all the way to plus 260. I see a lot of 220 and 240. So if you like Liam Smith, you know, I think it's a good fight, you know. It's okay, you know. It's not bad. It's a good fight. I think Eubank Jr. should be able to, I don't know. I don't think I'm not sure if he'll be able to stop him, like straight up. Maybe it'd be a cut or something like that, but I'm not sure because it was just Canelo, right? Canelo's the only guy that knocked him out. I think that was like the 9th round, something like that. Munguia pretty much handled him. He was able to knock him down too, if I remember correctly. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think he beat Anthony Fowler. And didn't he have that fight, I guess it was in 2020, with Jesse Vargas? I know he beat Sam Eggington a while back. He had those two back-to-back fights with Liam Williams. So I think it'll be entertaining. Eubank will land the more telling shots. But as far as, like, entertainment on the way, getting there, I do like this fight for that factor, you know. So I like Eubank Jr. I think it'll be, I don't know, maybe he will knock him down maybe once or twice. But I kind of feel like Liam Smith's going to make it the distance. Is it a 10-rounder or a 12-rounder? I don't know. It's not saying a box. Oh, it's a 12-rounder. Okay, so maybe Eubank Jr. can stop him. But I'm going to go, and this is at 160, right? And I guess he was at 160 not long ago, but we didn't get to see him fight at it, per se, right? I'm going to say the distance. I'm going to say unanimous decision with a knockdown or two for Chris Eubank Jr. So that's what we're going with. That's what we're going with there. I saw this. Someone sent me this fight news. Pacquiao Mundine update. So they're talking about, oh, it's an exhibition. Okay. Anthony Mundine proposed exhibition between boxing legend Manny Pacquiao and former world champion Anthony Mundine, tentatively scheduled for June. So there you go. There you have it. So, yeah, back to that, you know, as far as fight news goes, you know, that Inoue stuff is really interesting. I love it. I mean, if Inoue could, somehow, just fighting three times. Oh, yeah, I should look that up. When's the last time Inoue fought three fights in a year? I think it's been a little bit. Hasn't it? Let me check. Maybe I'm tripping. Yeah, I mean, it's been since 2017. He fought three times in 2016, three times in 2017. Otherwise, he only fought once in 2020. Yeah, so. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, shit, 122's deep, as we know. I mean, it's a good-ass division, so I'm really looking forward to Inoue, doing this. I think it's phenomenal. Anytime you get a high-level guy, one of the best, if not the very best, I think it's great. There is some fight news here. Luis Alberto Lopez versus Michael Conlan is being negotiated. Sign me up for that fight, dude. Also, it does kind of seem like, what is it, the May 20th is the date, Devin Haney and Vasily Lomachenko. I've heard it both ways as far as it's going to be Madison Square Garden. That's what Chava said. May 20th, Madison, Chava from ESPN. It's being planned for May 20th at the Garden. That'd be sweet. But Devin Haney said not MSG. Stay tuned. So then we hear other reports that, well, actually, it's not going to be in Madison Square Garden. It's going to be, overseas. So I don't really quite know, exactly where it's going to be, but it does sound like they're attempting to have the Middle East, host it. So it is what it is. It's still a good fight. I'm not going to sit there and, freak out and stuff like that, I think, I would rather it be here, but, money's money. You know what I mean? Money is money. So, it is what it is. And then I mentioned this, Jake Paul, Tommy Fury. This is boxing scene, actually. February 25th in Saudi Arabia. That'll be on BT Sport. So that's something to think about anyway. But yeah, man, Inoue, dude, that would be great. And by the way, Boog Williams, he just coming out, the WBO just came out with some numbers here. They're new rankings, but Inoue, number one on the WBO, Aleem is number two, TJ Donaghy is at 11. Mike Plana and Derek Cunningham are out. So, he's number one right off the bat. Demetrius Andre is the new number one. Is that the WBO then? What is that for? There might be that Barakam dude, I think it's Barakam, the guy who's been taking step-aside money for Charlo, being the Mando. Him and Tony Harrison swap position 3 and 4. So, he's saying maybe there'll be an interim title here, which that kind of makes sense. Frank Martin enters at 8. Michelle Riviera is gone, out of the rankings anyway. Not trying to say he's gone, but yeah, number one Inoue. So, and man, that would be a great fight. I'm not saying it's next, but we know he's not fighting Figueroa anymore. So, to me, that's a pretty good sign that maybe they're negotiating. Maybe they're going to work out something where they both have fights and then fight each other in the summer, like I mentioned. I don't know. It's going to be pretty interesting, though. It's going to be pretty interesting. So, yeah, I got a text here. So the that was the WBO, right? Okay, so they moved him to one. So Aleem went from 1 to 2. Okay, so Fulton WBO. So that is, they made him number one. So let's get it. God, that would be a great fight, man. But I'm not going to get my hopes up for it being next. I just don't know. But anyway, back to the contract stuff. Oscar put out the tweet. I have no contract. Deadline for me is Monday or I'm moving on. Hashtag Davis Garcia. Right? And like I said, a lot of people went a lot of which ways with that. You know, people went the, oh, PBC, they don't want the fight. They haven't even sent the contract. What the hell's going on? Espinoza and Al Heyman and all that. And Gervonta might be ducking. This fight's not going to happen. Or the flip side was Oscar was actually talking to Garcia and saying, hey, dude, give me the contract, you know. Now, Espinoza came out and said, everybody calm down a little bit type stuff, talking about how contracts, sometimes they can be signed closer to the week. Then you did have Coppinger and many others say, well, not when it's a big fight. And, well, that's not true because the biggest fight, Mayweather Pacquiao, as far as pay-per-view, you know, that got signed really late. So, but either way, just by Oscar tweeting something, it's worth going, huh, I wonder what's up. I wonder if that deadline means something because obviously, you know, he did the next day or day after. Yeah, the next day they did sign the contract. They have the picture of him, you know, both of him, you know, saying finally received contract, time to put finishing touches. We have a fight April 15th. Let's go. So that's what it is. So April 15th, people started going, well, hold on, dude, April 15th. So they're going to have two pay-per-views in April? Does that mean, you know, we assume this is going to be on Showtime. So does that mean maybe Thurman and the Spence Thurman fight, is that going to be on Fox now? Do we get lucky and get one of these random, you know, Fox or CBS slots, you know? That'd be great, right? Imagine if, like, Benavidez and Plant was on CBS, right? Because CBS actually is, they have that. Remember I told you a couple times now that they have that. I think it's, is it February 4th? They have that one coming up on CBS. It's not boxing, but they have something on CBS, so I don't know. I'm not sure if that would, you know, of course, mean anything. But it's kind of interesting. Kind of interesting to – oh, someone just sent me this too. So it sounds like Red Ketch is out. I don't know if it was his manager. I'm not really sure. But Hank Lundy steps in now. Ticket announcement coming soon. Hank Lundy, Adrian Broner. So, yeah. I don't know. And by the way, Fight Hub TV did have a good interview with Espinoza. The guy who runs Fight Hub, and this isn't just singling him out, because some of these people that do these video and podcasts and all these part-time media members, and full-time, he's full-time media member. You know, a lot of times, like when he's talking to Oscar, like in the recent past about this fight or about whatever, it just seems like he's kind of making sure he's pro-Oscar and pro or kind of anti-PBC when he talks about it, because he'll say, I want to ask you a question. I think I already know the answer. This is what I think. But anyway, you know, it was kind of like, well, why don't you just ask the question, do follow-ups. So I've given him some grief, but he's not the only guy that I've given grief to in the media, right? Just some of the things that that dude will tweet where you're like, really, dude? Whatever, man. But he did a good job of walking Espinoza through. Espinoza walked him through the Spence Crawford stuff and also that the contract stuff. And I thought he did a good job of following up. I just wish he'd follow up. It's funny because it just seems like the follow-up quality questions aren't there when he's talking to somebody else. You know what I mean? And I'm not trying to just – I think he did a good job with this. I just wish guys like him – and like I said, all full-time and part-time media, not all of them, but a lot of them, it's just follow-up questions. Be non-biased. You don't have to go, oh, I heard this person's ducking some shit or you know, I don't know. You just don't have to do all that, you know. I would just, I don't know. But, yeah, there was a lot of people that were saying, okay, this fight's done, you know. And some people, someone just sent me this tweet from Chainsmoke, and this is his questions about Inoue. So are we expecting Inoue to come fight on PBC? Is Fulton going to fight in Japan? What's in it for Top Rank? Who's going to make the concessions to make the fight? Is there enough money? All that stuff, you know what I mean? And my guess is, and this is just a guess, but, and actually War of the Week Radio responded to him. I see it down there. It says the only way this fight gets made is if Heyman allows Fulton to compete in Japan. That's where the fight makes the most sense financially. This is not a U.S. fight, not enough money here. Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I do, you know what I mean? I do agree with that. I think that's perfect. You know what I mean? I think that's perfect. I think that would, because doesn't he have an Amazon deal as well, if I remember correctly? Anyway, I hope that fight happens, dude. That would be the shit. That would be so awesome. But yeah, it's the Oscar deadline was kind of much to do about nothing in a sense, because he didn't hold to the deadline. But hey, he did send a message enough to where now, you know, now he has the contract signed. So, like, I don't know if they hadn't sent it. The reason why I said I don't know is because I heard Ryan Garcia on more than one interview say he's seen the contract. So it made it sound like his people were just going through it and they just hadn't, you know. So I don't know. Maybe they're going back and forth with the PBC. Whatever it is, the contract's signed now. Now, obviously, the legal stuff, that's the next hurdle in this fight, to be honest with you. Because there was this tweet going around about, you know, Espinoza said that there are no contracts signed. There's not going to be an official contract signed until after the Tank court date. And someone, I think it was Jay Keldrone Boxing, tweeted that, amongst other ones too. And someone followed up saying Espinoza, you know, talking about no signing contract till after Tank court date. A lot of blind faith he's asking Oscar to put in the process. We know Tank going to prison. We just don't know if judge will allow him to fight first. They should have been more upfront with the fans. He said, I never said that ever. So these are quotes that are like, they use his Twitter page a little bit, and they put this weird quote in it. It's not an actual tweet. So it's kind of weird. But he said he didn't say it. I don't know. You know what I mean? I'm not really sure. Okay, wow. Man, some of these messages, I'm just going through them. Jesus Christ. Anyway, that Francis Ngannou, is that his name? The dude from the was from the UFC MMA guy. Sounds like he's going to be entertaining boxing promoters and MMA organization offers, because he's now out of his UFC deal. So I don't know. Fernando Vargas is quoted saying, "Vato pulled a heart muscle." Talk about Hector. Oh, jeez. Vato pulled a heart muscle. Oh, Vargas. That was classic. That was classic. This is the part where... So Espinoza was saying, I'm not saying that contracts are never signed until the week of the fight, but then he used Davis and Hector, used some other examples. You know, he was the lawyer of Golden Boy and for Oscar there for a second, or for a while. So he said that happened as well. But this is the tweet someone sent me from Coppinger. Huge difference between waiting until week of the fight to sign contracts for an in-house promotion versus a mega fight with co-promotional rivals. It's like, that's true, but, you know, this is Fred saying about that tweet. Cop apparently forgetting that Espinoza had handled several co-promotions with rivals. But yeah, that's the thing. Do a little research on the Mayweather-Pacquiao. You said big fights. Well, that's a big fight. I'd say that's a big fight. So, you know, they didn't sign till pretty late. So, it is what it is. The contract signed. That's what's important. Texas Run Boxing says Chris Primetime Colbert and Jose El Rayo Valenzuela will be on the Plant versus Benavidez undercard. Interesting. Very interesting. Oh, God. Oh, yesterday, boxing legends born yesterday, so that would have been the 17th. Muhammad Ali, Usyk, Customato, Barrero, Sammy Angott. Is it Angott? Ann Wolf, Buddy McGirt. Gee, crazy. That was Boxing Raw. Huh. Damn. That's a lot. That is a whole lot. Yeah, but here it is. There's a ESPN article. Mayweather Pacquiao still not signed. This is April 21st. The fight was in early May. So it is what it is. So Joe Habib said the fight was never happening anyway. What difference does a deadline make? That's what he tweeted over Oscar. See, there was so much kind of back and forth. Jermaine Ortiz fought Berlanga, Antoine, Tio, and the amateurs in Richardson. Yeah, he did fight a lot of guys. Oh, and this is E.J. Smith talking about, I get Oscar's frustrations, but this is how the PBC brand operates. Most fighters sign their shit at the weigh-in. It's normal, but a fight of this magnitude, Golden Boy should have had the contract already, especially if they agreed to all the points. Yeah, and ultimately they did. This is Sean McGee. Eubank Jr. is an interesting tussle. Eubank has the size, physicality, and speed and chin to hurt Smith and push him around. If he goes to war, rating Smith highly, I can only see one winner, Eubank. I figure at some point Smith will make him engage, and I see Eubank winning. Yeah, so do I. When I fought, they would call, this is the amount, this is the opponent, this is the network, you're the co-main. I would agree over the phone, I wouldn't officially sign, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. This is Stephen Shaw. The fight with Big Baby Anderson is inedible. Jesus Christ. Inedible. Dude, what the? I don't know who this is texting me, but this is Patrick Connor. Oscar threatening to axe Tank and Garcia before it even happens. These cats are still out here fantasizing about how awful Heyman is. You hate to see that kind of public self-embarrassment. Yeah, I was getting a little worried, I will admit, when he did that, because I was like, oh, tell me this isn't a Charlo Munguia scenario. According to Chava ESPN, Brandon Figueroa, Mark McSayo, March 4th. So it seems like without Showtime announcing their whole schedule, it does seem like they're going to have a lot more cards this year for the PBC, because they've already scheduled. I mean, if you look at the first 2 months, right, and we're not on February yet, but we had two fights scheduled in a Showbox, right? So Showbox coming up this Friday. But the Charlo Zhu fight was supposed to be at the end of January. And obviously it got postponed. But that's two events because of, Tank and Garcia. I'm talking Hector, the one that just happened. And then they have one February 4th, right? And then there's supposed to be one February 25th, I believe it is, here at the Armory. And now we're here March 4th. But we're also here in potentially March 18th. For Benavidez and Plant. So we're starting to hear rumors of undercard fights. So, yeah, I think they're going to definitely do more cards. You know, like I said, PBC, their contract with Fox is up. Do they still owe them some obligations from that contract? We know COVID messed it up a little bit. That might be the case. And that's why I'm thinking maybe Spence and Thurman's going to be in April, but just with Fox. I have no clue. We won't know until they announce it, but it does. I mean, I've heard Espinoza say more than once that they're going to be busier this year. Now, I'm not saying what's going to happen in the fall. Sometimes Showtime does slow down during football, but we'll see. This is J-Bro. April 8th, we'll have a 108 unification fight. So that's going to be a good fight. Kinshura Taraha and Jonathan Gonzalez. He says it's going to take place in Japan, so that's good. Imagine if Oscar Rivas didn't get injured, we would have seen a war right now with the Jogbun Rivas. That's true. That's true. It would have been a better fight. It would have been a better fight. I didn't realize it either. That event with KSI was actually not only a pay-per-view, but it was actually a $40 pay-per-view now. I thought they started at 10, and then I think the last one was 20. But I'm pretty sure it said it was a $40. I went to DAZN really quick just to look at it. And I was like, whoa, damn, you know? Now, Jermaine Franklin of late has emerged as now the leading candidate for Anthony Joshua. April 1st at the O2 Arena. This is Chris McKinnon from the Daily Star. We mentioned one last week. We'll see, you know. This is Deuce. Brandon Lee, 23-year-old junior welterweight prospect, who has featured often, blah, 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 blah. So he is now being advised by Al Haymon. His father, Bobby, remains manager and trainer. Lee was promoted by Cameron Duncan until his contract ended last year. Okay, so Brandon Lee, 23 years old, needs a step-up fight. He's now straight with Haymon. Okay. Here, I'm going to send the picture. This is Oscar De La Hoya with Garcia saying, we've received the contract. We finally received it. Time to put the finishing touches, and I assume that means signing it. So, there you go. This is Jana Beck. I hope my next opponent will be famous. Are there any stars who are not afraid to fight? Oh, boy. This is a lot of people's guy here, Rick Glaser. Clearly Dana White was wrong for striking his wife, and what Dana did was horrible. But, of course, there's a but. You knew it was coming. Considering the circumstance, both were completely drunk. We don't know both of the levels of intoxication. And she slapped Dana first. I don't think he would have slapped his wife if she hadn't acted in that regard first. Well, what did he say to her to get her to slap, you know? But to sit here and be like, oh, man, you know, it's no big deal. You can't just slap someone. It's not like she's going around slapping random people. ESPN treats boxing like a side chick. No, they're like a main chick. Side chicks get treated better. And that pertains to the fight card starting later because college basketball went over, which it's just so silly to hear about. Boxing fans, oh, ESPN. Dude, they do that for other college basketball games. Sometimes other higher rated. If the game that's on right then and there is going late, they don't just cut it. They don't just abruptly cut it and go to the next game or the next fight. Right? They don't do that. So, of course it's going to happen. It doesn't mean ESPN hates boxing. But the people have been saying this forever, dude. It's so funny. All these influencers wouldn't be getting into boxing if boxing was on the decline. It's actually the opposite. They see it as an opportunity. These people sit in their boxing bubble preaching to the choir, believe that they say is true, even when the data says opposite, delusional. That's Lefty and Ari. Yeah, I mean, there has been a lot of talk about, oh, you know, boxing has itself to blame. Boxing has itself to blame just in general for a lot of stuff. But I keep going back to this point, right, of... And then people will say, well, you got to be more like Jake Paul to these fighters and promote yourself. What people forget is these folks have been on YouTube and other platforms, but we'll just say YouTube, for years and years and years. I think it was like 10 years worth of posting or something like that for Jake Paul. Like, and the things he and his brother and many people like this had to say and do on camera to get all these followers and to be that person that they just want to see what happens, even if it's a train wreck, let's just watch it. A lot of these boxing people would just destroy. I mean, they're already calling, you know, an Instagram model instead of a boxer for Ryan Garcia anyway. And you could say, you know, it does feel like he's got one foot in the door, one foot out, you know, him taking breaks for mental health, whatever. Okay, I understand some of that, but, like, he just signed to fight a tough fight. My whole point is, he got famous on Instagram. There's no doubt about it, Ryan Garcia. And that's why he has a platform. But to act like these boxers are going to be like Jake Paul, like in the sense of building up, you know, 10 and 15 and 20 million followers on YouTube, you can sit there and rip these guys on YouTube all you want, right, as boxers and stuff. But they put in a lot of time doing these videos. No matter what you think of the content of the video and why something went viral, and we know Logan Paul was walking, remember, I think it was in Japan, was it that the suicide forest or whatever, where he showed someone that was, I think they had just committed suicide, right? There was a big, big outrage. Like I said, the things that they did and said on these videos to get this famous, the boxing press would destroy boxers if they did this stuff. They just would. So it's like, you can say that some boxers need to have, you know, a professional team behind them to have, you know, to be on TikTok and YouTube and all that stuff. And that is 100% fair, especially some of them, no doubt about it. But to act like you got to catch up, you got to do what Jake Paul's doing, it's like, dude, you got to do that for 10 years, you know? And then, and sometimes it doesn't take that long. I'm just using him as an example. But to act like these people should, you know, that that they're losing out, dude. It's like, yeah, but you got to be a professional boxer too. Notice how Jake doesn't post as much as he used to? If this was him 10 years ago, he wouldn't be as famous as he was now. So I just think, I don't know, I just find it hilarious. And then when people are on Twitter or YouTube, then they're like, dude, get in the gym. Why don't you get in the gym, bro? Stop tweeting. But then you say they want them to promote more. So it's like, whichever it is, you know. This is someone in the business for quite some time. I love how people on Twitter think they are the czar of boxing. I've been in this business for 25 years and learned something new every day. Basically, shut up. Basically, yeah, it's so true. Especially for the people that are full-time, you know, in the business. It's not an easy business to... Okay, someone just sent me this. Dude, this is Goodfella TV, Goodfella Sport, and then Ring IQ is right below. And it says, word on the street, allegedly Caleb Plant popped hot, just a rumor. So the word on the street, but it's just a rumor. And then you can see the views and the tweets and same with Ring IQ right below it when he said something about – he put something about, you know, VADA saying, well, basically if you do VADA testing, they're going to send it to you, the results. They're going to send it to your manager. They're going to send it to the promoter, yada, 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 right? But you can choose if you want to tweet it out, to have them tweet out, hey, they passed the test, right? And that's really just for show. Because as we know, these VADA tests are great, but they're only 2 or 3 months at a time. It's not like they're getting tested year-round Olympic style. Now, it's better than a lot of sports, right? Sure. But it's still not, I don't know. It just, this is a perfect example of Twitter, but in this case, boxing Twitter, of just, I'm going to put something out there. Now, you could at least make an example. You know, you can say, for instance, that, well, could be this week should be the week that they announce that fight, if in fact it is going to be the 18th. I mean, it's January 18th now, right? So including, let's say, to the end of this week, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks. So, yeah, this would be the week to announce the fight. So you could say, I wonder why it hasn't been announced. I heard a rumor. I don't know if it's true. I'm just going to say it, but I'm not going to, I don't know. It's just more, you know, more stuff like this, dude. Ooh, it looks like this is Coppinger. I'm sure this is Coppinger. Edgar Berlanga and Top Rank have mutually agreed to part ways after months of talks that failed to resolve key issues. Top Rank and Team Berlanga told ESPN both sides have signed the separation agreement. And now Berlanga, 25, is now a free agent. Truth Over Narrative said he's going to be going to the zone. No way he's going to the PBC with those sharks in the water. Anyway, so there's a little bit of breaking news. I mean, 168 is getting hotter now that some fights are, quote-unquote, being talked about, hopefully getting made, and all that stuff. So I think that about does it. Someone just texted me. I am hoping that Haney Loma is at MSG as well. But, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. I'm not going to hold my breath over it. You know what I mean? But, you know, if that's how the fight happens, you'd assume they wouldn't do it on pay-per-view if it was in the Middle East. I think it'd either be on ESPN, hopefully, like it was in Australia, when he fought in Australia both times, or ESPN Plus, you know, whatever. That'd be fine, too. But, you know, if they're going to the Middle East because the money's there, then hopefully that satisfies everybody, and it won't have to be a pay-per-view. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. Life gets in the way. I got to do my thing. Hopefully everybody has a good week and enjoy the fights. We'll be back next Tuesday or something.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel you have the upper hand. So now, as you fight, let's say you fight 4 or 5 years of straight survival, the bullshit, the whole bag, and when you become the world champion, you're like, you know what, that made it. That will show you. Every dollar worth of what I deserve. Why? Because I'm the world champion.